Hello, everyone. Welcome to today's New Year conference call with CCAN and Bill McKibben, and thank you so much for joining us. My name is Denise Robbins. I'm the Communications Director at Chesapeake Climate Action Network. I just want to update you on a couple of housekeeping items before turning the call over to Mike and Bill. First, today's call is being recorded, and we will make it available to you to share with your friends beginning tomorrow on our website. We've had a really huge response to our invitation. We encourage you all to share the upcoming events that you'll hear about on this call with your friends and neighbors. Second, after hearing from our speakers, we'll be answering questions from all of you. So throughout the call, if you have a question, please email it to info@chesapeakeclimate.org, and we'll try to get through as many as we can after we hear from our speakers. So that's info, I-N-F-O, at chesapeakeclimate.org. Send your questions our way, and we'll answer them after our speakers spend time after they speak. And so with that, I'm going to turn it over to Mike Tidwell, the director of CCAN. Mike, take it away.
Thanks, Denise. Again, this is Mike Tidwell, director of Chesapeake Climate Action Network, and I want to welcome all of you. I also want to thank my friend Bill McKibben, who is on the line and who will speak in just a moment. This call is basically an experiment. CCAN has been a leader in grassroots climate organizing in Maryland, Virginia, and D.C. for nearly 15 years, but we've never had a regional call like this, only state-by-state calls in the past. Our experiment is to see if we can better coordinate the climate fight across our region, especially in light of the recent Trump election. And let me say, so far, so good. As Denise mentioned, we've had over 500 people register for this call. And right now, on the line with you are citizens ranging from the faraway mountains of Southwest Virginia to the Inner Harbor of Baltimore City to the neighborhoods of Capitol Hill in D.C. to the farms of Garrett County in Western Maryland, all the way to the banks of the Elizabeth River in Norfolk. So let's get started. First of all, we had a devastating election in November, and over the holidays, over the eggnog and champagne, we all heard many progressive-minded people say, I got to do something. I got to get involved in 2017. And we're also hearing the plain fact that state action on climate and energy issues will be more important than ever, given the inevitable backsliding by Donald Trump at the federal level. But we in the states of Maryland, Virginia, and D.C. have a special opportunity and indeed a special responsibility to act. After all, we occupy and totally surround the nation's capital. Our local actions are felt and seen by national policymakers. We get a twofer. So in a real way, our fellow humans nationwide and worldwide are counting on us in this region to fight harder and smarter than ever before in our local fights and to show up, really show up in big numbers for all the big gatherings of national significance on climate change coming up in Washington, D.C. You want to do something? You want to fight Trump with all your might? Then you live in the very best place in the entire world to make a difference on global warming and many other progressive issues. And before Bill takes a turn here, let me say something about Mr. Trump. First of all, don't hide your despair. The record California drought has now killed 100 million trees in California, according to the Washington Post the other day, and destroyed hundreds of farms. And I was in Annapolis, Maryland, just this morning, where the Republican mayor there is scrambling to get $3 million in FEMA emergency money to address appalling almost weekly flooding from sea level rise in Maryland's capital. And we just elected a crazed climate denier as president. It's a dark time, and all our friends and family see it's a dark time, and if we act like everything is just going to be okay, they will start thinking we're the ones who are crazy, and they won't listen to us. So it's okay to despair. But the next question is, so what? Across history, people have faced longer odds against even more powerful enemies. As Bill McKibben himself wrote in his November 30th Nation article, quote, the active many can overcome the ruthless few. So let's get active. As a region, here are a few highlights you're going to hear about after Bill speaks. First, our friends in Virginia are fighting two massive frack gas pipelines, not unlike the Dakota Access Pipeline. And in the same way that people from across America came together for the Dakota fight. We need everyone across this region and nationwide to stop the Atlantic Coast and Mountain Valley pipelines in Virginia for frack gas. You'll learn more about that in just a minute. Second, our friends in Maryland are on the brink of banning fracking in that state forever through legislation in a state that's part of the famous Marcellus Shale region. Elsewhere, this unacceptable drilling technique is out of control, but in Maryland, with your help, we're going to ban it this year. You'll learn more in a moment. Third, CCAN has joined a growing coalition of groups in the District of Columbia to help pass in 2017 a carbon fee through the City Council on every ton of CO2 emitted in the Capitol, and then use the revenue to actually improve the lives of the city's residents, especially low-income citizens. Again, you'll learn more in a second. Also, as a follow-up to this call, we'll email you a list of upcoming protests and actions of national consequence and on a national scale in the District of Columbia. These include, on Sunday, January 15th, the MLK Jr. Birthday Faith Convergence, a climate-themed march organized by the group Interfaith Moral Climate on, or Interfaith Moral Action on Climate, and you can find them on Facebook. On Friday, January 20th, Inauguration Day, the hashtag DisruptJ20 event, where progressive groups will noisily protest Trump. Learn more at disruptj20.org. On January 21st, the big one, the Women's March on Washington. It's going to be really big, and you can find them at womensmarch.com. Moving forward a little bit, on April 29th, the People's Climate Mobilization, a huge climate march in D.C. Go to peoplesclimate.org. And also near and dear to CCAN's heart, just a week after the inauguration, on Saturday, January 28th, the 12th annual CCAN Polar Bear Plunge. Every year, just south of the Capitol on the Potomac River, we pick a beach next to a bar at a place called National Harbor, and hundreds of us jump, run, and wade into the water. Now more than ever, we need you to join us for this craziness on January 28th. Come up from Virginia, come down from Maryland, take a Metro bus over from D.C. It's a fundraiser for CCAN and an absolute hoot of a party for you. Learn more and sign up at www.keepwintercold.org. And let me say, by way of introducing Bill McKibben, that it is his fault that every year I jump into the Potomac River in January. That's because I read his book, The End of Nature, in 1990, and it haunted me until I left my own journalism career in 2002 to form the Chesapeake Climate Action Network. I did it because I realized to make a difference on climate change, like Bill, I had to build a community of activists because the group is stronger than any individual. And the proof comes every year when CCAN does its polar bear plunge on the Potomac. No one hates cold weather more than me. An August outdoor pool is terrifying to me. By myself, on the banks of the freezing Potomac River in January, by myself, I could never run into the water. You could hit me with a 2x4. You could give me $1 million. I'm not going into that freezing river by myself. But every January, with hundreds of people on the river beach, as we count down 10, 9, 8, and we capture it on video every year, 3, 2, 1, go, no one hesitates. Everyone goes in together, into the freezing water, ages 8 to 80. That's the power of the group. That's the kind of community we need. That's the activism we need across this region and nation to push ourselves and each other to together do amazing things against long odds. And again, it's all Bill McKibben's fault that I do any of this. As our next speaker, Bill needs no introduction. Besides his books on the end of nature and earth, we all know him as the founder of 350.org, the best climate grassroots group on the planet. And remember, if you want to pose a question for Bill or myself to answer later in the call, send an email to info@chesapeakeclimate.org. And we'll answer as many as we can. Meanwhile, it's a great pleasure now more than ever to introduce my friend, my colleague, and source of so much inspiration, Bill McKibben.
Well, hello, Mike. What a pleasure to get to join you all. Look, just to begin with, there's no better regional bunch of organizers around environmental issues any place on the planet than CCAN, and I can say that with some authority because I've traveled all over the planet spewing carbon behind me, I'm afraid, in order to try and organize some kind of movement to do something about the greatest problem we've ever faced. And as Mike says, there are reasons to feel glum and dark about that at the moment. Just when it appeared that the world was finally beginning to get its act together, just when Paris was in the rearview mirror and the pace of adoption of renewable energy around the world was beginning to surge, just at that moment, we took this Trumpian detour. And I guess our job is to make sure that that detour does as little damage as possible and is as short as possible, because we don't have a lot of room to spare. I won't spend any time bringing you up to date on the science, except to say that, as you know, 2016 was the hottest year we've ever had. It smashed the record we set in 2015, which smashed the record we set in 2014. With all that heat has come big changes. The incredibly rapid melt in the Arctic and now the Antarctic should be somewhat frightening to everyone. The planet is beginning to, it's beginning to come loose. We don't know how much give there is in that system. We're conducting an experiment that we haven't conducted before on this Earth, at least in times when human beings have been around. But we know that we're very close to the edge, and we're starting to truly feel the effects. Those of us in this country feel them when it floods, as happens now regularly along the eastern seaboard at high tide, or when we get too much rain, as is happening this moment in California, where 6 years of drought are being ended with 6 days of nonstop rain and plenty of fear and worry that horrific flooding will result. But of course, in this country, we're still able to deal with most of this. We have the resources and the money to do it. That's less true for our brothers and sisters elsewhere in the world who are counting on us because they're even more acutely vulnerable. And by us at this point, I mean this movement that we all have built together. It's a movement that's capable of doing things. We saw it with Keystone. We've seen it most recently with the just spectacular leadership that came from Native communities in the fight over Standing Rock. I hope at least a few of you had the opportunity to get out there to the confluence of the Cannonball and the Missouri Rivers and see the amazing display of unity and of nonviolent strength. It was enough to, at least for the moment, stop a truly hideous example of environmental racism and of fossil foolishness. We don't know what will happen post-January 20th to the things we fought for in the past. We know we'll have to try and keep fighting a rearguard action to protect what victories we can, but we also know that we cannot spend the next 5 years on defense. We've got to be working really hard at all the places and junctures and levels we can work to keep this momentum going and growing. Some of that's in Washington, of course, and you guys have a special power living where you live, the chance to intervene regularly in the most important place in the world. January 9th, which is just the beginning of next week, Monday, there'll be demonstrations in, I think, all 50 states for Day of Denial. If you go to the 350.org website and hit the button on the front that says Resist Trump's Climate Agenda, then you'll find the one nearest you. Just as important, the next night, 350's hosting a training at St. Stephen's Church in D.C., where we've done so many things over the years. It's a training for people who want to get involved in actions in D.C. around the confirmation hearings next week and beyond into the future. And maybe the most important date after the polar bear plunge to scrawl down in your calendars is April 29th, which apparently is going to be a big climate convergence on D.C., People's Climate March to let people in D.C. know that we've gone nowhere, that the press of science and the demand for justice is as strong as it ever was. Along with those things happening in D.C., we've got lots of other levers we're going to have to pull on. If the biggest levers in Washington are denied us for the moment, we're going to have to find thousands of other ones, and happily they're there. A lot of them are in state capitals. I've been watching this progress of this no fracking resolution in Maryland with great interest, because here in Vermont, where I live, we were the first state, maybe the first jurisdiction in the world to ban fracking. And it's been amazingly interesting to watch people in New York rise to the occasion, people in France and Tasmania and Wales and place after place after all over the world that have put this really dangerous technology off limits. There's stuff like that happening at the state and local level all over the place, and increasingly we're getting much, much smarter. People around the rest of the world are beginning to catch up with CCAN and its knowledge of how to use local legislative hearings, how to use local authorities and public utility commissions and things like that. But you guys need to keep on setting the example. The divestment work that we began a few years ago is probably more important now than it's ever been, because with Washington hard to make progress in, we need to go behind the puppets in D.C. and to their puppet masters in the boardrooms of the companies that write them the checks, that send them the marching orders. It's possible to do that. We've seen enormous pressure brought to bear on the banks that finance the Dakota Access Pipeline. We're going to have to get better and better at that. The continuing pressure on fossil fuel companies by colleges, universities, localities is truly stunning. It's one of the things that's helped lead to the quick adoption of renewable energy, to the fact that we're now spending more money worldwide putting up renewable energy than we are putting up fossil energy year after year after year. That's very good news. Our job is to pick up the pace of it, because climate change in the end is a race. It's just a math problem. And somehow we have to make the pace and momentum of our clean energy drive go fast enough to catch up with the damage, the runaway damage that we're seeing from physics all over the planet. I'm not 100% clear that we're capable of doing it, because we waited a long time to get started, and because there are days when the damage in the physical world seems so intense, and there are days when our political life seems so crazy, when even the kind of norms of civilized behavior that one took for granted growing up in 20th century America seem now to be tossed out the window in a kind of bizarre conflagration of political hideousness. But we take great comfort in the bonds we have as a movement, a very large, very big, very diverse, very beautiful movement. And we need to make sure that that movement includes not just those of us working on the environment, but people working on all manner of things. I've said several times to reporters and things in recent weeks that it's possible that some of the most important work that the climate movement will do in the first months of the Trump administration will be helping our brothers and sisters facing deportation or other aspects of the really retrograde agenda that the new president is bringing with him. These are the people who have suffered the most from, among other things, environmental injustice. They are our brothers and sisters, and they are the future of this fight. And so we will all try to stand together as best we can, as best we can. I'm not always the best person to ask for a pep talk. The name of the book that I wrote about all this 27 years ago now was The End of Nature, which wasn't really the most cheerful title that there ever was. But I do not despair, and I do not think that there's sanctions for any of us to give up. Just the opposite. Time has come to really prove that we're serious about what we mean. And I look forward so much to being shoulder to shoulder with y'all.
Thank you, Bill McKibben. And Bill has agreed to stay on the line to answer some questions in a moment. Again, if you have a question about anything Bill just said, anything on the national and international level that you're curious about, or one of our local campaigns, our regional campaigns to ban fracking in Maryland, stop pipelines in Virginia, or pass a carbon fee in the District of Columbia, send your question to info@ChesapeakeClimate.org, info@ChesapeakeClimate.org. And while you're sending that email, is Brooke on the line yet?
Yes,
Yeah. Hey, Brooke. So while you're sending that email, let's get some quick field reports from two CCAN grassroots organizers. First, Brooke Harper is joining us. Brooke is CCAN lead organizer in the fight to pass a fracking ban in Maryland. And by the way, it's never been done quite like Maryland. In all deference to our friends in Vermont who banned fracking, I don't believe there's shale gas of the same quantity as in Maryland. And New York banned fracking, but they did it by executive order. So Maryland, with your help, with all the activists on this call, with your help, will get the state's General Assembly to ban fracking through permanent legislation in a state that's part of the Marcellus Shale. And this will not only protect Marylanders and the climate, it will, we think, inspire more fracking ban campaigns nationwide. So Brooke, give us an update from the field. Oops, Brooke, we're not picking you up. Can you hear us?
Hmm?
Go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, that's better.
Great. So we've had an amazing summer and fall, and we've passed a whole lot of bans and just had hundreds and thousands of activists that just come out in support of the fracking bans. We've had resolutions passed across the state in Rockville and Little County. And we've had amazing bans. Baltimore City.
Brooke, you're fading in and out, so I'm going to give you a couple of seconds to try to find a better spot. I know Brooke is actually organizing tonight in Charles County in Southern Maryland. Brooke, do you want to try to find another spot? I'm going to switch to the District of Columbia and come back to you in a minute, if that's all right with you, just because we're not hearing you very well. Let's turn to the District of Columbia right now, where CCAN has joined a coalition of faith, justice, and business and environmental groups in pushing for a city council law to put a so-called price on carbon. This fee on every ton of CO2 triggered in the district will then be used as rebates and investments to protect and improve the lives of city residents, especially lower-income residents who suffer most from climate impacts. And yes, our goal is to avoid the conflicts that we're seeing in Washington State's failed attempt at a carbon tax in that state in November. The coalition in D.C. is truly big, it's truly broad, truly diverse, and to tell us more is Jeremiah Lowry. He is a D.C. native who has worked on past campaigns in the city covering such topics as water pollution and worker rights. Jeremiah?
Awesome. Thank you. You know, as mentioned, you know, I've worked on a number of campaigns here in Washington, D.C., but never have I been this excited to work on a campaign like the Carbon Fee campaign. This campaign is going to systematically change and move our climate moving forward for the better. Being a Washingtonian, I know that we can make D.C. one of the most environmentally progressive cities in the world, and that starts with passing a carbon fee. And it's possible, and it's only possible if we actually build our movement here in D.C., build a movement to make it happen here in Washington, D.C. So if you live in Maryland, D.C., or Virginia, you can participate in this movement. We're building in the district. We are currently in the process of growing our coalition, as stated. We're going to do that by winning the support of neighborhood advisory commissions. So if you live in D.C., we are coming to a neighborhood near you to win the support of your local commissioners. And we need D.C. residents to show up to these neighborhood endorsement meetings to show their support for the campaign. Another opportunity, if folks want to get involved in the movement, is we're going to be canvassing businesses in D.C. So if you live in D.C., VA, or Maryland, you can come help us canvass business districts in Washington, D.C. Once a week, we're going to canvass major business districts to win the support of business owners. We know that business support is going to be key for this campaign, so it's important we hit the ground running and get out there and talk to business owners face-to-face so we can let them know about the campaign and win their support.
Great. Jeremiah Lowry with CCAN, thank you so much. And the key part, I think, of what you just said is to get involved, we need not just district folks, but if you live in Maryland or Virginia, the suburbs of Northern Virginia or Maryland, get involved. We need your help canvassing. And you can learn more by emailing Jeremiah@ChesapeakeClimate.org. That's Jeremih at ChesapeakeClimate.org. And he will put you to work. This is a great example of how we can use our regional depth as a movement in the Mid-Atlantic, the Chesapeake region, to focus on really key campaigns, including putting a price on carbon in the district. With y'all's help, we're going to send carbon-priced electricity to the White House, whether they want it or not, and to Congress, whether they want it or not. It's historic. It's just an amazing campaign, and we have a lot of opportunities and a good odds with us. So thank you, Jeremiah. Brooke, are you back on the phone?
Yes. Can you hear me clearly?
Yeah, that sounds better. Go ahead, Brooke. So back to Maryland fracking.
Yeah. So I just want to say thank you to all of you for joining this call, and thank you to the hundreds of CCAN activists that are making fracking and a fracking ban in Maryland a real possibility and are going to get the job done. Because of your work over the last few months and activists coming together in the local communities, we've banned fracking in Prince George's County, Baltimore City, Baltimore County, Frostburg, Friendsville, and Montgomery County, and hundreds of you have showed up to rally and testify before your city councils, leading to resolutions and statements of support for a statewide ban in Rockville, Bel Air, Greenbelt, and Anne Arundel County. And now it's time that we have to take that message to Annapolis, and it's going to take each and every one of us working together to pass a permanent statewide ban. And we need you to send a strong message to our legislators that Marylanders oppose fracking. And for those of you that live outside of Western Maryland, I'm asking you to join us on February 9th for our Don't Frack Maryland Coalition Lobby Day, and to tell your legislators that we want a state that's powered by solar and wind and not frack gas, and to work towards a statewide permanent ban, and then come back on March 2nd to join Western Marylanders as we march through the streets of Annapolis, and as Western Marylanders speak truth to power to send their message to their own legislators that they want a frack-free future. And I just want to share with all of you that this has been one of the most personal and most amazing campaigns that I have worked on, and I have just been humbled by so many activists coming out. And as a Western Marylander with my family, Western Marylander with my family roots in Western Maryland, I just want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for all the work that you've done, and to tell you to keep marching on, because we are going to make history and be the first state to pass a legislative ban. So please look out for your email. In a few days, we'll be sending out information for you to sign up for the lobby days and the march. And now I'm going to actually go back, because I'm in Charles County right now doing a lobby training. But I hope all of you have a good night, and I hope to see you in Annapolis on February 9th.
Thank you, Brooke Harper, always organizing, always on the road. And if you want to get in touch with Brooke directly, you can email her at Brooke, that's B-R-O-O-K-E, at ChesapeakeClimate.org. Brooke at ChesapeakeClimate.org. Fantastic. The last major issue I'm going to touch on before we turn it over to questions is the issue of the massive gas, frack gas pipelines in Virginia. Our main organizer in Virginia on the pipeline fight is also at an organizing event in Buckingham County. Many of you on the phone from Virginia know Buckingham County. There's a huge hearing tonight on a compressor station that's key to building the Atlantic Coast Pipeline. These two pipelines that are being proposed by energy companies would run from the fracking fields of West Virginia into Virginia. One of them would go on to North Carolina. The other would bring frack gas into the state of Virginia and potentially for export overseas through Cove Point in southern Maryland. We have to stop these pipelines. If they were built, a credible study was done by a former Department of Energy senior official who calculated that if these pipelines are built, they're going to trigger so much additional greenhouse gas emissions equal to all the state of Virginia's current power plants combined. So you're talking about a huge new pulse of greenhouse gas emissions. We have to keep that frack gas in the ground in West Virginia, and to do it, we have to create bottlenecks by blocking these pipelines and compressor stations in Virginia. This is another example where regionally we need everyone's help, Marylanders, people in D.C., all across Virginia. The best thing you can do to help stop these pipelines is go to www.nonewpipelines.org, nonewpipelines.org, and there's a pledge there, and we stole this from you, Bill, during the Keystone XL pipeline fight. There was a huge list and petition started by citizens, tens of thousands of people pledging to engage in peaceful civil disobedience if they ever started building the Keystone XL pipeline into the United States, the northern leg of the pipeline. We're doing the same thing in Virginia. You'll see when you go to that website, nonewpipelines.org, a pledge that you can take online saying that you will join me and already hundreds of people who have pledged that if either of these pipelines, the Atlantic Coast Pipeline or Mountain Valley Pipeline, start construction and the movement, the regulatory movement on those pipelines is such that we could face that possibility this year for both pipelines. So we need your help. So go to nonewpipelines.org. This is a Dakota-like fight. We are engaging more and more indigenous leaders in Virginia, military veterans. You guys will remember that just the weekend before, the Army Corps of Engineers decided not to grant the permit for the Dakota Access Pipeline. Literally thousands of veterans, military veterans from across the United States, went to Cannonball and were ready to be protectors themselves. We're doing the same in Virginia. So we need everyone's help. If you live in Maryland, you live in D.C., sign the pledge, join us. Virginians, sign the pledge and tell all your friends across the United States to help us. So those are our three really big campaigns, pipelines in Virginia, carbon pricing in D.C., and fracking in Maryland. I also want to say for our Virginia friends on the phone, we if you want hope, if you want a bright, you know, if not small light to focus on in Virginia, we have some great Republicans in coastal Virginia who are fighting to put a price on carbon in Virginia, actually. They are fighting to have Virginia join the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, a cap and trade program for power plants, and then to use an overwhelming share of that money to protect citizens along the coast of Virginia and Hampton Roads region against sea level rise from climate change, so adaptation. Ron Villanueva is a great member of the House of Delegates in Virginia, a Republican who's also an activist on climate, and he sponsored this bill 3 years in a row. It's going to be introduced in the 2017 General Assembly in Virginia next week. The entire Virginia Beach Republican City Council supports it. And by the way, Virginia Beach is the largest city in Virginia. And I think, Bill, your mother-in-law lives there, so we need to protect her. And the mayor, Republican mayor of the city, supports this bill. You can learn more by going to the Virginia tab at ChesapeakeClimate.org. And that is, for me at least, a bright spot in that we have bipartisan support for really taking action on climate change in Virginia moving toward as well climate adaptation along that coastline that floods more and more. Not any further delay, I think we can take some questions. We've been getting some questions from all of you. And Bill, the first question we've got is for you. And it says, Bill, you've been doing the climate fight longer than anyone else. How do you keep fighting? How can you get, how do you keep fighting? What gives you hope? What keeps you going?
Well, that's a good question, and I got to say there are days when I get a little depressed and things, and one of the things I then go do is look at all the pictures that have come in around the world over the last 10 years since we started 350.org. You know, we started from the beginning to try and do it globally, and our first insight was that people would like to be able to see each other. And so our killer app back then in 2008, before Facebook was really up and running too big and things, was Flickr. There are, after 20,000 demonstrations in every country on Earth except North Korea, there are now, I don't know, like 100,000 pictures there on the Flickr account. And they're gorgeous, beautiful. Some of the demonstrations are enormous in unlikely places. Thousands of people in the streets of Addis Ababa, Bujumbura, you name it. Some of them are tiny, small groups of people at the top of the highest mountain in Antarctica, for our first big global day of action. But the ones I always concentrate on the most are the ones from places like, Bangladesh or the mountains of Peru the places where people have literally done nothing to cause the problem that we face. And, I sometimes think that if I were a Bangladeshi and someone appeared from the West asking me to help in this kind of fight, my response would be to say, go to hell. Go do it yourself. But the fact that people have been so willing and gracious and eager to be involved all together in this big movement, that's enough to keep me coming back for more. That and the understanding that that though we're not going to escape without big damage, already there's big damage, that every ton of carbon we can keep out of the atmosphere, every cubic liter of methane that doesn't leak out of a fracked gas well someplace, that changes the odds just a little bit. And given the stakes, this is the biggest crisis we've ever faced with nothing short of civilization kind of on the line. Given those stakes, shifting the odds even a little bit seems well worth the time. I guess that's as good as I've got. When I get really down and out, then I go outside for a while into the woods and remind myself what a beautiful world we were born on too. And it seems like it would be a great shame and a kind of disservice to the idea of the big brain were we just to let it go without a good fight.
Thanks, Bill. We also have another question for you that says, you work to get carbon pricing language into the Democratic Party platform. What should states do? What should states be doing to write carbon pricing in at the state level or regional level, in your view?
Well, that's a good question. And of course, it's, sort of suboptimal to do it at the state or regional level because it makes more sense. I mean, it makes most sense of all to do it in some kind of global way. But since that's not going to happen for a moment, there's lots of, I don't have the playbook here for exactly how best to do this. But I do know that in the places where it's been effectively tried in different formulations, in California, in British Columbia and things, it's proved robust, popular, and increasingly effective. And what seems to be happening is that more and more places are emulating or even joining in with those places. You know, we're going to have to band together, those of us who care about this stuff, and it's good to have a few places like California that are there to help lead the fight. It is, after all, the sixth largest economy on Earth. So it's, you know, it's not trivial what they're doing in Sacramento. And there and elsewhere, we've got some places to join in with instead of feeling like people have to, you know, start afresh everywhere.
Great. And one more question, Bill, for you before we move to some other regional questions. I read about this the other day, and it struck me as interesting. But the question is, along with divestment, what about the strategic use of general strikes?
Well, you know, we're entering uncharted territory, so that means that we're going to people are going to be coming up with all kinds of ideas for new tactics. Now, no one, you know, no one's done a general strike effectively in this country for a very, very, very long time. And the reason is the word general. You know, it takes a large percentage of people to get things done in that kind of demonstration. We've looked for places in the climate movement where 3, 4, 5, 6% of the population that's really aroused, engaged, ready to go, can have a huge, can exert real leverage. But that may be very difficult now, at least on a federal level. And there may be more anger, more willingness to really consider large-scale and dramatic things like general strikes that have worked and worked well in other parts of the world. I mean, I guess, and this is probably as good a place for me to leave you as any, and let you get on to important regional work. One of the things we don't completely understand yet about the Trump time is whether it's going to be bad in a kind of normal way, like we were used to from George W. Bush, or whether it's going to be bad in a truly abnormal way that violates all the norms that we're used to in our political and cultural life. And I'm afraid there are signs that the latter may be the case, and if so, then we're going to have to be very ingenious and very disciplined in figuring out new and powerful ways to respond. And the only thing we know for sure about them is that they will have to be nonviolent, that they'll have to build on the legacy of the greatest legacy in many ways of the 20th century, the legacy of Gandhi and King, and the demonstration that an aroused population can take on enormous force and prevail as long as it stays peaceful, disciplined, and united. For me, the finest story of the year just passed were the people out in North Dakota who, under extreme provocation from local authorities, managed to do all those things, stay peaceful, disciplined, and united. And their leadership and their example should help us all in the time ahead. So I guess the real answer is keep your eyes open and your ears open as ideas develop. Toss new ones in the mix. Let's figure out what we can do together. And if I don't see you all before then, I'll be down there on January 21st for the Women's March, but we'll definitely be talking to you a lot in the weeks leading up to this gathering on April 29th around climate. Those of you who are in New York in September of 2014 will remember what a good time we had with the People's Climate March there, and we will do our best to buoy each other up and make a real show of force at the end of April this spring. So in the meantime, Mike and all your crew, so many thanks for all your work. And everybody else, on we go. trusting in each other. Take care, everybody.
Great, Bill. Thanks for joining. And everyone else, please stay on the line. We still have some more questions from our regional campaigns. And I want to thank Bill McKibben again for joining us and spending so much time with us tonight. Moving on to Virginia, we have a question here that says, what makes the Mountain Valley and Atlantic Coast pipelines worth resisting? What makes them different from all the other pipelines approved across the region? The reality is, like Bill was saying, we're entering new territory with a lot of these projects. The Mountain Valley Pipeline and the Atlantic Coast Pipelines are massive. You're talking about 48-inch pipes bringing an extraordinary amount of gas into the state. The leakage of methane, again, combined with the in-point combustion for this gas, would just bring a extraordinary pulse of greenhouse gases into the state. But also, these companies are using the tool of eminent domain. They're literally about to seize property from individual farm landowners. And you have Republicans, Democrats, liberals, conservatives, old, young people throughout these regions of Mountain Virginia fighting these pipelines on land rights issues, justice issues, indigenous people, African-American communities, compressor stations. It's a massive infrastructure build-out just for these two pipelines that make them stand out from the smaller pipelines built in the past. These are pipelines that are going to run along ridge lines in the mountains, cross delicate trout habitat in mountain streams, skirt the edges of national forests. It is big. It is different. It is at a scale that we have to respond to, likewise, with a massive scale of resistance. Another question we got on the pipelines is, will there be an encampment or encampment similar to Cannonball, North Dakota, where people can go for a few days or longer to resist these pipelines? The answer to that is probably. There are people already, as we speak, who are scouting out places in West Virginia and Virginia where thousands of people can come and camp and spend time, either come for a weekend or come for several weeks, to show the same kind of resistance. And we will keep you informed on all of that. If you sign the pledge at the website nonewpipelines.org, also I encourage you just to sign up for CCAN's action alerts, whether you live in Maryland, Virginia, or D.C., by going to ChesapeakeClimate.org and just clicking on alerts. Another question we've gotten is for D.C. A question is, how is CCAN and its coalition partners going to avoid some of the conflicts that we're seeing in Washington State as folks tried to pass a carbon tax in that state in November? One of the big criticisms of that bill was that was one of process. Were enough communities consulted? Were all stakeholders in the state at the table? Did the bill, did the initiative that was finally on the ballot, that lost on the ballot, did it reflect the will and the insights of broad, diverse communities? And in the District of Columbia, we are learning from that experience in Washington State. We are engaging churches and faith groups like Interfaith Power and Light, business organizations, justice organizations, environmental groups, talking to the Sierra Club and others, everybody, just dozens and dozens of meetings involving hundreds and hundreds of community leaders. As Jeremiah Lowry said earlier on this call, there are meetings with ANC groups, neighborhood groups throughout the city, and we believe this is going to be a strong, inclusive bill that is going to become law in 2017. So everyone in America can not just point to British Columbia or the city of Boulder where there's carbon taxes and carbon fees, but they can point to the capital city of America where there will be a just and fair and effective carbon fee. Also in Maryland, there was a question of how can we get involved and find out about how to carpool to different events. And I had a piece of paper here that had information about that. And Kristen or Denise, if you want to bring me information. But I think we're going to form Facebook pages where people can go for different events to sign up for these events on fracking in Annapolis and various rallies, and also Facebook pages for how you can carpool to the Polar Bear Plunge on January 28th and, you know, get to know your neighbors better and hitch a ride with people. And if after this call, we're going to be emailing out reminder information about all these upcoming events, including the ones Bill mentioned that 350.org is organizing in January in the District of Columbia. But just a reminder that there is on January 15th, again, the MLK Jr. Birthday Faith Convergence that is being sponsored by the group Interfaith Moral Action on Climate, and you can find them on Facebook. January 20th, again, Inauguration Day, lots going on at hashtag DisruptJ20. That event is going to bring progressive groups from all over the country to noisily protest Trump's inauguration. You can learn more at DisruptJ20.org. Also January 21, the big one, as Bill mentioned, the Women's March on Washington. Learn more at womensmarch.com. That's com, not org. And April 29th, again, the People's Climate March, which is going to be really big. And then again, the Polar Bear Plunge on January 28th on the Potomac River. And I just want to give another plug to the Polar Bear Plunge, because if you really want to have a peak life experience, you really got to be part of this on January 28th. Go to www.keepwintercold.org and sign up. You know, it's a fundraiser for CCAN. It's sort of like a breast cancer bike-a-thon or a AIDS walk-a-thon where you get your friends and family to sponsor you. And it's very simple to set up your own page, become a plunger. It's amazing how fast your friends and family will open up their wallets once they learn that you're jumping into the Potomac River on the coldest meteorological Saturday of the year, January 28th. So I hope you'll do it. You'll have fun. It takes no willpower to actually do it. We hang out in a bar and restaurant afterwards, and it is just so much fun. So, again, keepwintercold.org. We have another question here about Maryland fracking. And the fracking movement in Maryland is just so powerful and so broad that it's so exciting. And Brooke Harper, who was on the phone earlier, really has not only been inspired by this campaign, but she herself has inspired so many people across the state. Again, you can learn more at ChesapeakeClimate.org. Click on the Maryland page, and you'll see a lot of information about our fracking ban campaign. But the question is, what do you mean by a fracking ban in Maryland? Can't legislation be passed later to repeal it? In other words, how could this be a permanent ban? And, you know, the reality is we've already banned fracking in so many cities and counties across the state, as Brooke mentioned, Montgomery County, Prince George's County. There have been resolutions and efforts in Western Maryland and Southern Maryland. And we believe that once the state takes action to permanently ban this technique of drilling, that it will be impossible politically for anyone to bring it back and to make fracking actually legal again. So we're very optimistic that once it's banned, not only will it be banned in Maryland, but it will inspire so many states and municipalities across the country to do the same. Another question we've gotten is, what is the latest on Cove Point? Cove Point is a facility in Southern Maryland in Calvert County that Dominion Energy is building to export frac gas to India and Japan and elsewhere. CCAN and many of you on this phone fought for a long time several years ago to keep that construction from starting, where they liquefy the gas, frac gas, and put it on tankers and send it around the world. But they are now actually building it. They started building it about a year and a half ago. It's a, I think, about a $4.8 billion facility, and they're about, I think, about halfway done building it. But the good news is this, that the market for frac gas, the export market, has really taken a beating since Dominion started construction of that facility, and it is quite unclear at this point that frac gas will ever be exported. from Cove Point. It's a tragic, massive misallocation of resources. It would contribute to climate change. We know that. But the reality is Dominion may have guessed wrong, that now that demand for frack gas around the world is actually falling as wind and solar prices and projects expand worldwide, we are hopeful that Cove Point will never see any exports at all or very little in the future. There are still some legal efforts to try to stop it. There are some challenges to the Department of Energy, but they are building it. That is the update. We will continue to challenge it legally, we will keep you posted on that. Again, if you want to get involved in any of these campaigns, if you're wondering about carpooling to events and getting to know who else in a group or who belongs to CCAN lives near you, we will be creating Facebook event pages for our actions more often in the future, and we encourage all of you to use those Facebook pages to post carpooling needs and availability. We have another question about the D.C. fight to put a price on carbon and a carbon fee. And the question is, can't Congress, especially with Donald Trump as president, simply block the District of Columbia from exerting its will to price carbon and reduce emissions? And the answer is yes. Constitutionally, they are capable. But the good news is that in the last few years, Congress has not been as active in challenging laws passed by the District of Columbia. And in the process, increasingly progressive laws have been passed and been implemented in the district. The legalization of marijuana, just a couple of weeks ago, a Family Leave Act allowing residents or workers in the District of Columbia to take leave for a sick loved one or for maternity or paternity purposes passed, and the prospects are good. It's going to become law. So we are encouraged that the district is seeing more and more autonomy, even if Congress does decide to challenge a price on carbon, a carbon fee, carbon tax in the district, we will have a great opportunity to debate and have a conversation about how we need to inevitably price carbon all over the country and all over the world to allow market forces to effectively decarbonize the global climate. Also, there are questions about divestment fights happening across the region. Those go on. There are many happening on campuses. You can check out the Virginia Student Environmental Coalition's website to learn more about divestment efforts happening there. Also, there's a great group called 350 MOCO for Montgomery County in Maryland in D.C. suburb, and there's a big divestment fight going on to get the county council to divest its pension fund from direct investments in companies like BP and Arch Coal and others. And you can learn more at 350 MOCO's website, and also you can visit ChesapeakeClimate.org. Meanwhile, I'm a big believer that events should start on time and end on time. I'm so sorry we have not been able to get to all your questions. We got a lot of questions, and we had lots of people from all over the region. I do think that we have touched on a lot of the most important campaigns in Virginia, in the district, and in Maryland. It was so great to have Bill McKibben join us to give us that national and international perspective. And if Bill sounds tired, it's because he's been fighting this fight for a long time. And we all get very, very tired. And, again, it is not the most upbeat of moments in our history given recent current events. However, I often think of, for example, the former East Bloc, under the, behind the Iron Curtain, and how in 1989 the Iron Curtain basically fell faster than anyone thought, without a shot being fired, without bloodshed, and throughout that region. No one anticipated it. No one thought it would happen. And these people in the Eastern Bloc in the former Soviet Union did it with massive suppression of First Amendment rights and free speech rights. They did it with massive suppression in laws against the right to organize and to unionize and to speak out. And yet they did it all the same. And it happened quickly, and it happened faster than anyone thought it could happen. So I leave you with that metaphor and that note in history, that Martin Luther King said, sometimes only on the darkest nights can you really, really see the stars shine brightly. And we have to look for those stars, leaders like Bill McKibben, campaigns like the fracking ban in Maryland, efforts around the world to join us. I believe and I expect that we're going to see faster progress on this issue despite the momentary darkness than any of us ever imagined. But we have to do it by being together. Again, the power of the individual is nothing compared to the power of the group. We at CCAN are dedicating ourselves to mobilizing our members regionally and having people in Maryland go to Virginia and help us fight these pipelines and have people in Virginia go to the District of Columbia and knock on doors for a carbon pricing. So we will follow up with an email. Thank you for spending an hour of your time on this call. Thank you for everything you do. Thank you for inspiring us and our staff. We will work tirelessly with you over the coming months. I hope you'll begin by joining the Polar Bear Plunge. Again, I can't say enough about how fun it is and how helpful it would be to CCAN. And if you really want to do something in 2017, that's really doing something. So thank you again to all the CCAN staff and everyone who dialed in, and to my friend Bill McKibben, and we'll see you soon. Thank you, everybody. Good night.